Hello, and welcome to another jam-packed episode of My Favorite Conservative. I am Edward. Okay. Oh, actually, this is where Andrea normally introduces herself, but unfortunately, she is not able to join us today. I'd like to say that she's suffering from the world's longest hangover from celebrating Donald Trump's historic victory. What was that, 19 days ago? But the truth is, she was traveling all last week for her actual job, and in sunny Southern California, mind you, and somehow she came back with a horrible cold. So we placed her on injured reserve, and I will soldier on solo today. So thanks for joining me. I do appreciate it very much. Let's get started. And if you're following the show and we see people watching live, thank you very much. We start every show for the last 6 months by looking at the polls. And so let's look at the first poll for the 2028 presidential race. No, I'm just kidding. We are done with the polls for now. I think we need to wean ourselves off of the polls for the next, you know, at least year, right? I think everybody's tired of them. They were wrong. Most of them, I think very, very few people got any of it right. Certainly nobody got that Donald Trump took all seven swing states. That was crazy. But we're getting off the polls. Let's jump into what we want to talk about today. I wanted to revisit the election, but kind of come at it from a different perspective. I want to know why Democrats lost, all right? Yeah, as I said earlier, we're 19 days past the election. We've had a little bit of time to look and analyze and see what's happened. I mean, actually, it feels longer than that, doesn't it? It feels longer than 19 days. Seems like, I don't know, 6 months ago. Anyway, I want to look back at the election. Why, not why the Republicans won, but why the Democrats lost. And they're not necessarily the same thing. Was it, I don't know, bad policy? Was it bad messaging? Was it sexism? Was it racism? Let's find out. But let me begin with this. For our viewers and our listeners who are on the left, I urge you to take my analysis to heart, because as much as I want the right and Republicans to completely dominate our political landscape, I think our country is best served with two strong political parties. And I say two, a lot of people think we need to have, you know, 10 parties all vying from different perspectives like they do in Europe and Canada and everything else. I don't necessarily buy into that. And the reason is, you know, Donald Trump won with 49% of the vote now. And I believe, you know, to me, that's pretty much of a mandate and how many counties and everything else that he took. But when you have too many parties, you're going to get somebody who wins the presidential race with 32% of the vote. And it's difficult to coalesce as a country behind somebody that's basically only representing about 30% of the people. So I do think two strong, you know, Democratic and Republican parties are very, very good for this country. Obviously, the independents, you know, are up and coming, but I think they're still many, many moons away from being a true power. But let's get started. Why did the Democrats lose? Let me count the ways, shall we? All right, let's start with the candidate, or more properly put, candidates. Because there were actually three candidates in this race, right? So we had Joe Biden. Let's start with lovely Joe Biden. He was, and I guess he still is, somebody even know, but I think he's still the sitting president. But he had horrible approval numbers. I mean, horrible. And obviously, the Democrats were worried about that, but they thought, well, with a friendly press and we hide him out as much as possible, we can kind of drag him over the finish line. But what the Democratic Party did is they actually rigged the primaries to lock out any serious challengers to Biden, you know, especially with RFK Jr. He was a force to be reckoned with. I think at one point he was in the high 20s in terms of polling, which is a serious, serious problem. So the Democrats, your party rigged the elections. You moved the primaries around to make it more favorable to Joe Biden. You locked out, a lot of delegates from actually voting for certain candidates by putting restrictions on them that they could never meet, and it backfired on them. But unfortunately for Joe Biden, he had several deer in the headlight moments during his debate with Trump, you know, and the entire world couldn't unsee it. Once you saw it, and I've talked with a lot of my friends on the left, and I asked them about the debate, and I said, what did you think about, what was your thought process when you saw him freeze and the mouth was open and he had the blank stare? And every one of them said, oh, good God, this is horrible. We'll never recover from this. And, you know, I guess my question should be to everybody out there on the left. Everybody on the right already knew this. You knew it on the left, but you just didn't want to admit it. You just hated Trump so much you were going to put up somebody who was seriously cognitively challenged. So you're going to own that one there. But then what happened? We had an organized coup led by Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi, and with an assist from George Clooney, right? Remember, he's one of Barack Obama's closest buddies, and Barack put him up to putting out an op-ed in the New York Times, basically saying, thanks for all the hard work, Joe, but you're out of here. Nancy Pelosi went to him and said, we're going to do it the easy way, or we're going to do it the hard way. It's time to step down. So Joe Biden steps down. There is what everybody thinks is going to be this huge vacuum in the Democratic Party, because obviously when you've rigged the primaries the way they did, there wasn't a serious second place person. And if everybody remembers before this, you know, when Kamala Harris's name was brought up, it was a joke because she was just horrible. But anyway, Joe gets pushed aside. But in his last kind of act of defiance to an FU to Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama, he immediately comes out and states that Kamala Harris will be the Democratic nominee. So completely screws over them, the establishment. And I think he's just saying, up yours, have a nice day. You're stuck with her now. But here's the bottom line on Joe Biden. By downplaying and outright hiding his mental and physical condition until it was unavoidable, Democrats missed an opportunity for leaders like, I don't know, Josh Shapiro or Andy Beshear of Kentucky or Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan or anyone else to step up. So you only have yourselves to blame for that debacle. And that brings us to the anointed one, Kamala Harris. But let's review Kamala's trip into this. The week before she was elevated by Joe Biden to the post, to the nominee, to be the nominee, I should say, she had the worst vice presidential polling numbers in history. And this includes Darth Vader himself, Dick Cheney, the guy who actually shot somebody in the face. She had lower polling numbers than him. And she was never considered a serious contender because of her ill-fated 2019 run for president, where she never even got to the first primary. It was just a debacle. But Joe Biden pushes her in. Miraculously, in a complete 180, the media promotes her as the most capable, incredible candidate of all time. Right? Remember that? Remember Joy? Yay, she's the candidate of Joy. So they start pushing for her. And unfortunately for Kamala, she has a documented history of far left views and positions. And she completely disavows and reverses all of those things once she's all of a sudden nominated. So do you remember what her famous quote was? My positions have changed, my values have not. What does that even mean? That's nonsense, absolute nonsense. And in fact, Kamala Harris is probably more famous for all of her incredibly inarticulate word salads, right? What were some of them? You know, the passage of time and community neighborhoods and all kinds of just absolute nonsense. And we could look by it because, you know, Joe Biden was still technically the president and was going to get his term served out. And we didn't see all this coming. But yeah, the word salads, you know, it should have been a nightly joke on all the late night shows. But of course, they were covering for her. But one of the things I think that really pissed a lot of people off is she would never answer a question directly unless it was on abortion, right? That's the only thing that she will give you a straight answer on, abortion. But usually she would come up with some incomprehensive iteration of, you know, I was raised a middle-class child to every question that was asked, and start out with this long, drawn-out answer that says nothing but just trying to take up time so that the interview will end. And people started to see that. And it actually became a joke on Saturday Night Live. I was surprised. They actually made fun of it a few times. So good for them. But with Kamala, she couldn't think on her feet. She couldn't speak extemporaneously. She hated doing policy work, right? Ask her staff about that. Kamala Harris, as vice president, had a 93%, I believe, 93, 94% turnover rate in her office. And every one of the people that left said the same thing. They said, we would do the work. We would put together all her briefing books and we would give them to her and we'd want to go over it with her. And she wouldn't study. She would go to an interview. She would look like a complete fool and then come back and absolutely berate the staff for their incompetence. That should tell you something right there. I can't imagine what like the day after the election was like with our staff. But anyway, she hated doing the policy work. I came to describe her as having the charm of Hillary Clinton with the intelligence of Joe Biden. I don't think she had any charm whatsoever. She was this automated laugh, you know, horrible cackle laugh, laughing at her own jokes that aren't funny. And she wasn't very bright. And Joe Biden wasn't very bright. This combination of president and vice president was probably the least intelligent, at least in modern times. Obviously, you don't know about before that, but ever since I've been alive and a little bit before that, usually people that rose to the presidency were pretty intelligent. So here's the bottom line on Kamala Harris, though. She has no core values, except, of course, for abortion. She won't do the work to understand the policy and explain the issues in a coherent manner. That's not a good combination. So if you don't have any core values, you're not speaking from the heart when you're talking about things. And if you don't want to study and do the work, at least, you know, you should at least try to come up with something comprehensive to answer a question. She was unable to do so. You know, when people look back on her work as a prosecutor, that was also the other one. Besides, I was raised in a middle-class family. I was a prosecutor. I prosecuted multinational criminal cartels or something like that. And nobody could find any case where she was the lead attorney on. That should tell you something. That tells you that she pushes off the work onto somebody else. She wants the position. She wants the title, but she doesn't want to do the work. So, amen. Let's move on from Kamala. Let's look at a few of the issues, though, on why I think Democrats lost. Let's start with the biggie, immigration. Everybody, left and right, center, knows that Joe Biden appointed Kamala as the border czar. You can deny it, which they immediately did as soon as the immigration went south and she was named, that she wasn't a border czar. She was only studying root causes or whatever this ridiculous try to get out of it was. She was the border czar, and since Biden gave her that, she owns the issue, right? She can't run away from the issue. However, the American people, we didn't want 10 to 12 to 15 million people flooding into this country illegally. You know, first, if you recall, when they took over in 2021, COVID was still a very big thing on the landscape. And they brought in millions of people with no vaccinations, sent them all around the country, but yet still mandated that we get shots and go through all these hoops just to live our daily lives. But not wanting 10 to 12 to 15 million people in here, red state governors finally got smart. We're talking, you know, the governor of Texas and Florida, they were tired of getting all of these immigrants in, and they started shipping them north to blue state sanctuary cities. And the big city mayors, you know, started to feel the pinch. But remember Martha's Vineyard, right? Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, in a brilliant move, flew a whopping 48 illegal immigrants to Martha's Vineyard, and the residents there had an absolute cow, right? They freaked out. You know, the multi-million dollar homes there, the incredible wealth, and they couldn't handle 48 illegal immigrants there. They called the National Guard out to have these people removed within, what was it, 2 days, 3 days tops? So just the hypocrisy was just unbelievable. And that was one of the defining moments, I think, that people started to turn, the American people started to turn on, you know, these people all talk about they have their yard signs and everything else out there, but they don't really believe it. They just think it's something, virtue signaling for them so they feel better about themselves. But going back to, you know, shipping these people, shipping these illegals into blue cities, you know, the mayors initially welcomed them with, you know, with a red carpet, and we were welcoming them off the bus and everything else. But that was the wrong thing to do. Obviously, we knew it was the wrong thing to do because they put them up in hotels, right? Huge 4 and 5 star hotels. They gave them debit cards. They gave them free healthcare. They put their children in our schools, all the while poor and homeless Americans and veterans were pushed aside. And eventually it all came crashing down on the sanctuary cities, right? Crime skyrocketed. Social services were cut to taxpaying citizens. Kids couldn't use their gyms at the schools because they were housing illegal immigrants. It was a horrible, horrible situation. It still is. Unfortunately, I think hopefully Donald Trump is going to be able to fix it. But here's the bottom line on immigration. It's not difficult to understand why people voted against these policies. When you put non-citizens' interests ahead of the American people's interest, you will lose every time. And that's exactly what the left has done. They have put the illegal non-citizen ahead of us, which, what's Donald Trump's main thing? America first. You want to talk about resonating with the American people? Yeah, that did it. America first. So immigration. Let's talk now a biggie, inflation. Let's take a look at, you know, go back down the memory hole here a little bit. So in terms of spending, because spending is what causes inflation, government spending. So Donald Trump, in March of 2020, when we were hit with the coronavirus outbreak, he signed the CARES Act, right? The CARES stands for Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act. That's March of 2020, right when it started. It was $2.2 trillion. Now, you don't have to be that old, but look back 10 years, 12 years. And when people would put through bills in the House and the Senate, spending bills, if they got over, I don't know, $100 billion, That was a lot. And there was a huge debate about that kind of spending. We immediately jumped to trillions of dollars. At the time, I understood why Trump signed it. I was not for it. I think it probably had at least $1 trillion too much in it, because once you put out a bill that big, everybody, left and right, all the Congress people put all of their pet projects in it, and they did. But let's move forward. So that was March of 2020. Let's move forward to Joe Biden's going to take over. Inflation at the time in January of 2021, when Joe Biden took over, was 1.4%. Even with $2.2 trillion in spending, it's holding steady. That's a great number, 1.4%. Joe Biden then pushes through the American Rescue Plan just 2 months after taking office in March of 2022. Or I'm sorry, in March of 2021. It was $1.9 trillion. So in the course of 1 year, we've added $4.1 trillion to the economy. This, everything was, going better with the CARES Act that Trump signed. You had unemployment was going down, inflation was down, jobs were coming back, the economy was growing, GDP was growing nicely, but Biden knew that he could get through some huge spending, and he did with the, American Rescue Plan, because I don't know why he convinced the American people that we needed to spend another $2 trillion. He then, another year later, tries to push through the Build Back Better Act. Remember that? Build Back Better? Well, it was actually also known as the New Green Deal. Now, the New Green Deal was just a bunch of projects to give to all of the cronies of the Democrat Party, all of the pet projects that they wanted. And fortunately for the American people, Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, Kirsten Sinema, the senator from Arizona, they opposed it. And they, as much as they kept putting pressure on him, Sinema finally relented, and Joe Manchin was the final holdout. And mind you, when this is being put through or being projected now, inflation has gone from 1.4% to 9.1%. Just horrible, which is just killing American families. So they can't get the Build Back Better Act through. So what do? They rename it. Same bill. They now call it the Inflation Reduction Act, because inflation's now over 9%. They end up passing it in August 2022 because Joe Manchin is an idiot and says, "Oh, gee, an Inflation Reduction Act, that sounds good," even though they said it's the exact same bill that he would not pass previously. Obviously, there was some sort of payoff for West Virginia that made him sign it. So they add another $891 billion. That's just taking another can of lighter fluid and throwing it on the inflation fire. And you're shocked, that it continues to roar. So we have added, in these first couple of years, $5 trillion to the economy in 2 years. $5 trillion. The only entity that can cause inflation is government. Private companies cannot cause inflation. People spending don't cause inflation. It's government spending. Adding money to the money supply is what causes inflation. So, we pushed through Biden and Harris, they pushed through tr $3 trillion in extra spending that we didn't need. And they wonder why inflation, got out of control. And in fact, we've added so much money to the national debt, we are adding $1 trillion to the national debt every 100 days. So think about that. We got 365 days in a year. What's that? $3.6 trillion a year we're going to add to our national debt. That's horrible. But here's the bottom line on inflation. Americans can see the government spending our tax dollars like, I don't know, drunken sailors, and apologies to drunken sailors on that, right? As they continue to struggle themselves. And Democrats, throw around the world the word trillion like it's play money, but it's real money. And inflation is the hidden tax that hurts low and middle income households the most. It is something that it's that hidden tax that, you know, people see every day, not realizing, gee, where did it come from? It comes from too much government spending. So, you know, a huge reason why Democrats lost was all of that spending, which of course kind of leads to pricing, right? To prices. You know, people voted this time against the Democrats because prices have gone through the roof, right? Groceries, energy, gas, rent, everything. I mean, when Joe Biden took over in 2021, what did he do? He immediately reversed all of Trump's energy policies. And what happened? Energy prices went through the roof. Oil prices went through the roof. And the main driver of all these increased prices is energy, is gas, fuel, because you need energy, whether it's electricity from coal or natural gas, whatever, to run these factories that produce the goods, right? You need gas or fuel, diesel fuel, to get your product to market. And when everything goes up through the roof, which it did, the cost of everything is going to increase. And what was Kamala's answer and her response to how she's going to reduce prices? Price controls. Price controls. I mean, seriously, she tried to say that grocery stores were price gouging people and manufacturers were price gouging people. No, this is a perfect example of gaslighting, where everybody knows why the prices have gone up, because of their policies on energy, on fuel. They tried to blame the Putin price hike, right? That Vladimir Putin was the reason because he invaded Ukraine. No, it's not. It's because of their energy policies. And thank you for watching live. We see you. If anybody wants to comment, feel free. We'd love to talk to you. I will be happy to answer any questions that you do have. But here's the bottom line on prices. People are hurting financially, and they know who's responsible. It doesn't take a genius, right? It's not Putin's price hike or any other cockamamie spin. It's Biden and Harris's policies. People could easily measure how they were doing under Donald Trump to how they were doing under Joe Biden. It's not difficult. They knew they had way more buying power under Donald Trump. And that kind of leads us into wages, right? That this is one of the Democrats' like prime talking points, that, you know, wages have increased during the Biden-Harris administration. Yeah, they have. In fact, they even went up a little bit more than the same time as Trump. But if you adjust for inflation, your wages, your real wages, are actually negative 2.4%. Think about that. You're negative 2.4%. They don't want to include that number in there. They just want to take the big number of like 17% wages have gone up. Well, unfortunately, inflation is higher than that. So you have lost 2.4% of your wages over this last, almost 4 years. And telling people that they don't understand how great the economy is, that's just an insult to every American, right? Here's the bottom line on wages. People are running out of money before they're running out of days in the month. You've got your money's gone. You still got another week left in the month and you can't make the payments. It's not rocket science there, right? Let's move on to one that really, I think, created a big stir and I think got a lot of people out to the polls, and that's crime. And again, another gaslighting situation from the Biden-Harris administration. The FBI says violent crime is down 3%. Yay! And all the media talking heads, they all trumpeted this. Whenever anybody on the right would try to push back, they would just say, the FBI says so. Well, you got to remember, crime reporting changed in 2020. We'll go over this real quickly. Before 2020, in 2019, this is an interesting statistic here. 89% of municipal police departments, which cover about 97% of the population, submitted their crime data to the FBI. Now, the FBI changed all the reporting systems, and it made it more difficult for all these cities to do so. The cities were tied up with all these other problems and said, screw this, we're not going to report like we used to. It takes too much time. It's too detailed. So after 2020 and 2021, so remember, let's before 2020 and 2019, 89% of municipal police departments around the country, and that covered 97% of the population, reported their data to the FBI. By 2021, less than 63% of the same police departments, which cover only about 65% of the population, submitted their data. So you went from a 97% coverage to 65% coverage. And it gets better than that. Several big cities. I don't know what big cities. Well, Los Angeles, New York City, Chicago, Phoenix, Washington, D.C. did not report crime data at all to the FBI last year. Think about that. All of those cities that have incredible amounts of crime, and especially migrant, immigrant, illegal immigrant crime, did not report it to the FBI. And a lot of people, they don't report crimes as much because they know it will take forever, if at all, for an officer to respond, right? You've got blue city prosecutors, thank you, George Soros. They were reducing the charges from violent crimes down to misdemeanors. So that changes the whole reporting of them. And illegal immigration is a major cause of increased crimes. And I saw somebody who does a lot of work on crime statistics, and the name just is escaping me right now. He looked at if New York and Chicago and everybody else did report, instead of being down 3% on violent crimes, which the FBI said it is, it's actually up 35%. So people, this kind of gaslighting does not work. The bottom line on crime, people can see it around them all day long, every day. The crime, right? The drug overdoses, the overwhelmed emergency rooms. You've got a lot of, you know, horrific high-profile murders of young women by illegal immigrants. And I think the voters finally said, no more, no more. We can't take this. So another thing we want to look at that is just such a great example is world peace, stability in the world. I think this is a perfect example of Trump versus the Biden-Harris policies. And I challenge somebody to tell me what the Biden-Harris foreign policy is. What is it? You know, Reagan had the peace through strength, and Trump kept building coalitions around the world. What did Joe Biden do? Well, obviously the first thing he did was the horrible and horrific Afghanistan pullout, where we lost, you know, 13 service members at the Kabul airport. The stupidest move he could have ever done. Please don't try to blame it on Donald Trump. It was not Donald Trump's plan that Joe Biden implemented. In fact, Trump said before he left, he told the leaders of the Taliban, if you harm one hair on an American head, I will kill you. And from the moment he gave that to months and months and months later until Biden took over, not a single American was touched. And Biden plans this pullout of Afghanistan. Let's just revisit that very quickly, because we had built Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. I think we spent about $500 million on it. Massive, massive airfield for our military. And it was out, you know, secured in its own prime location, private location, I should say. It's kind of a out in the middle of nowhere. But that was good because it only had a couple of roads in and out. So Biden, what's he do? He abandons the Kabul airport or the Bagram Air Base and says, we're going to get everybody out through downtown Kabul in their airport, which is overrun by people trying to get out. And in fact, Joe Biden asked the Taliban, hey, would you man the roads, the checkpoints coming in to the airport and to the city? So you're asking a terrorist group to weed out terrorists coming in to the city and to the airport. And you're questioning why a bomber got in and killed 13 service members. Just horrible. What happened from that? Putin saw what an absolute idiot Joe Biden is on foreign policy, and he has been for his entire life. And 6 months after, seeing that, he invades Ukraine and knowing Biden's not going to do a damn thing about it. He goes in, takes over, and what do? We just start throwing gazillions of dollars to Ukraine, which most people in the country are not for. So now we've got Ukraine going to hell. We've got Hamas massacring Israelis, Israel responding. You've got a full-blown war going on there. And you wonder why people voted out the current administration. You've got Russia threatening to use nuclear weapons. I mean, we haven't had these kind of threats in 40 years. Thank you, Joe Biden. And the billions and billions that we're sending to Ukraine, when we can't take care of the people in our own country, people see it. So here's the bottom line on world peace. The American people do see it. They're not stupid. Donald Trump equals peace. Joe Biden equals world chaos. It's as simple as that. They understand strong leadership, and that is Donald Trump. And that is one of the main reasons that he won, and I think the world is breathing a sigh of relief, or at least the civilized world. There's a couple other things here. Just one other thing. Let's look at social policies very quickly, because this played a huge role in turning the election for Donald Trump, because you've got the left promoting these drag time story hours for kids. And I would like one person from the left to please explain to me why we need a man in a dress reading to our children. It's a very simple question. Please put it in the comments. Please email us. I would love to hear your response to it. There is zero reason for a man pretending to be a woman in a dress reading to our children. Zero. We have plenty of people to read to our kids. We don't need that. You've also got probably the highest profile thing out there is boys playing against girls in girls' sports. We had the Olympics debacle where a man won the boxing, gold medal against women. You're seeing it, in swimming. You're seeing it in every sport. You're seeing our girls get injured out there on these fields because they're just not used to playing with a man, and they shouldn't have to. And for the left who says, we're all about women, the only thing that you think that you're for women on is abortion. I personally think that's wrong. You're not for women if you're telling them to kill their children, but that's another day. But telling girls that they've trained their whole lives, they've put in these incredible hours, and for them to lose a chance at a college scholarship or a championship or just to be a member of a team, which builds you in life, learning how to work with teammates, losing those things because of the left's political correctness that somehow they think a boy can become a girl and vice versa is asinine. Just remember, this is the party that refuses to identify what a woman is. Remember, they're birthing people now. There's birthing people and non-birthing people. It's gone off the rails. And here's the bottom line of social policies. The Democrats have taken positions that leave many families feeling unsettled and promoting policies that seem out of touch with the everyday Americans. When they came for our kids and didn't protect our daughters, that was the last straw. And I think that is a huge reason why Donald Trump easily won that election. But let's wrap up with this, all right? Kamala was a lousy candidate who didn't give an interview for 40 days after being anointed as the Democratic nominee. 40 days, she sat silent. Then her interviews were on places like The View and Stephen Colbert and Charlemagne the God and a sex podcast. She did one with Anderson Cooper. She even went on 60 Minutes where they actually edited her responses to try to make her look semi-coherent. And on every one of these interviews that she did, she failed miserably. They asked her the simplest questions and she couldn't answer them. Remember Oprah? She went on the Oprah thing. And I remember looking at some of those two camera shots and she's giving her response. And Oprah's doing her best, but her eyes are just glazed over thinking, oh my God, this woman's an idiot. But yet somehow, you know, the celebrities rallied around her. And by the way, when you're paying celebrities to endorse you, I think that should be an FCC violation. And I hope that is looked into because many, many celebrities got money from the campaign. And in fact, you know, Kamala raised from donors in 30 days $1 billion. And she ended the campaign $20 million in debt. That's hard to go through $1 billion in 3 months. It really is. You gotta be throwing it out left and right. And I'm gonna guess there should be an auditing of the DNC and everybody who spent this money, because I guarantee there's a lot of air quote consultants that have new beach houses. There's going to be a lot of money out there. Yeah. What was it? Oprah took $500,000, I believe it was. And she said, oh no, that wasn't for me. That was to my production company. Hello, Oprah, how do you get paid? Oh, through your production company. Good Lord. You know, Kamala had the media in her corner. In fact, the statistics were in the mainstream media, she had 84% positive coverage. Donald Trump had 89% negative coverage. She raised $1 billion. She had celebrities. How do you lose? That's going to be just a great question for the history books. You know, what I found was funny was hearing a lot of people complain about Donald Trump going on Joe Rogan, the left complaining about Trump going on Joe Rogan, where he sat for 3 hours and talked with him in a conversation. And the left was saying, well, we need our own Joe Rogan. We need our own Joe Rogan. Well, lefties, I hate to tell you, Joe Rogan used to be a lefty. He was a huge Bernie Sanders supporter last time. Huge. And you have driven him from your party with your asinine policies. So yeah, you need a new Joe Rogan. You had one. Might want to take a look in the mirror there. And another reason I think Kamala lost is her pick of Tim Walz. Oh, good Lord have mercy. He's an idiot. He brings nothing to the table. He didn't bring any electoral votes. They were going to win Minnesota anyway. He was this man who, you know, misrepresented his military service. And he says, I'm a knucklehead. Sometimes I speak wrong. He's got ties to the Chinese. He was horrible. You know, he tried to present himself as this everyman kind of guy, right? I'm just your next door neighbor, you know. Well, I don't know about you. I want the next vice president and possibly president of the United States to be a little smarter than our next door neighbors, you know, just saying. So here's the final bottom line. I think the Democratic Party has become a collection of disparate, perpetually offended grievance groups. And many of these groups are at fundamental odds with each other, right? Think the LGBTQ or the Jewish voting bloc and the Muslim Brotherhood. They can't coexist and especially in the same political party. So you're trying to put all these little groups together to form this party. It doesn't work. Democrats didn't just drift left. They tacked hard left, very hard left. This is still a center-right country, and Democrats abandoned the working class voters and the unions in nearly every group, except for, of course, liberal, college-educated white women. And that's why you lost. You might need to do some really, really deep thinking about that. So thank you for entertaining the rant there. That was fun to get it off my chest here. But let's take a couple quick episodes here, or little spots that we do. This Week in Wins. This is fun. Okay, I'm going to pull actually a Jen Psaki here and circle back to what we referenced at the top of the show. I said we were done with the polls for a while, but this one's just too good to pass up. This is from our friend Philip Timotija at thehill.com. Headline: Harris is Democrats' preferred choice for 2028. from the article, despite her loss to President-elect Trump in the 2024 White House race, Vice President Harris is the Democrats' top choice to be their party's 2028 presidential nominee, according to a new survey. The poll released by Puck News / Echelon Insights found that 41% of likely Democratic voters would vote for Harris to be atop the Democratic ticket in 2028. Wow. I pray that that's true, and I hope that that holds. I would love to have Kamala leading this charge. What is she now, 59, 60 years old? She's going to be 63, 64 next time. When you get older in age, you usually don't start changing habits like reading profusely, you know, policy positions and things like that. So please bring Kamala on. But what was kind of interesting is they listed the top 12 people in this survey of who the Democrat voters would like for president. So Kamala was first at 41%. Second place, Gavin Newsom, governor of California, 8%. Josh Shapiro, governor of Pennsylvania, at 7%. And you've got Tim Walz and Pete Buttigieg, both at 6%. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez at 4%. Gretchen Whitmer at 3%, governor of Michigan. J.B. Pritzker, governor of Illinois, at 2%, along with Andy Beshear, the governor of Kentucky. Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, they're at 2%. And Jared Polis, who is the governor of Colorado. And Wes Moore, I want somebody to tell me who Wes Moore is. He's actually the governor of Maryland. They're both at 1%. So Kamala's got a big lead, 41% over Gavin Newsom at 8%. I would love that. Now, my like grab the popcorn dream ticket from this list would be a Gavin Newsom, Cory Booker ticket, right? They are two of the most insufferable, pompous, egotistical, self-important jackasses in politics today. They both have that uncanny ability to understand that they know that you don't believe a single thing that they're saying, but they continue to say it. It is an amazing talent to watch the disingenuousness, and they just smile right through it. So I would love to see that. Yeah, we're not going to do polls for a while. That was just a fun one that we had to throw in. The last thing we want to talk about this week is This Week in WTF, which kind of also doubles as a This Week in Woke. This is from our friend John Sexton at hotair.com, and this one kind of really pisses me off. This is: Georgia police arrest mom because her son went for a walk. From the article, Brittany Patterson lives in a rural part of Georgia with her four kids. Her husband is a superintendent at a school in Montana and is away much of the time. Last month, Patterson had to take one of her children to the doctor's office. She left her nearly 11-year-old son, Soren, at home with her father, the boy's grandfather. Everything sounds good now, right? Back to the article. At some point, Soren, the 11-year-old, decides to go for a walk to a local gas station where he knew his best friend's grandmother was working. He didn't ask permission, he just went. However, a female stranger who saw Soren walking down the road asked if he was okay and was told yes, but the stranger called 911 anyway. Law enforcement picked up Soren and brought him home. A few hours later, police officers showed up and arrested the mother, Brittany Patterson. Under Georgia law, listen to this part. Under Georgia law, parents can leave a child age 9 to 12 with a caretaker for up to 2 hours. She left Soren at home with his grandfather for 90 minutes. Now, to me, deviating from the article here, Georgia law says that you can only leave a child age 9 to 12 with a babysitter for 2 hours? Really? What happens if you want to go to a movie and a dinner? I mean, good Lord. Anyway, back to the article. The week after her arrest, she was presented with a safety plan from the Georgia Division of Family and Children Services. Under its terms, Patterson must designate a, air quote, safety person to watch over the kids whenever she leaves home without them and inform all household members anytime she leaves the residence. And with a case manager watching, she must tell Soren, the child who walked away, how important it is that he stay on the property. Wow. So this is where we are now in 2024, almost 2025, that your kid who's 11 years old can't walk down to a gas station. Now, mind you, this little town that they're from has 225 residents. 225. Everybody knows everybody. I understand stranger danger and all this other stuff. Yes, there are strangers out there that will hurt your child. There always have been. But over 90% of all violence or kidnappings, anything like that, comes from either a family member or a friend of the family. This is government overreach way beyond what it should be. Children should be able to go out and play if their parents deem it safe. I mean, yeah, I'm older, but, you know, I went out and played all day long. You know, on weekends, we would ride our bikes miles and miles away from our house. We'd go to the beach, which was probably 5-6 miles away by ourselves all day long at like 12 years old, and then come back when it got dark. And I know it's a little different world, but now every kid has a cell phone, right? They're way more in touch than we ever were. So this kind of stuff, just ridiculous, ridiculous. So thank you for watching, though. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. I see everybody that's watching here. I want to say thank you for joining us today. Please follow us on all our social media platforms. Please join us live on most Sundays, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn, X, and Facebook. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast, available whenever, wherever you're listening right now. And please show our support by joining our locals community. We'd love that. Learn more and follow us on our socials at myfavoriteconservative.show. That's myfavoriteconservative.show. We will be back next week with a brand new episode. Andrea will have recovered by then. I am really looking forward to getting her back on the screen with us here. So thank you all for joining us. Everybody have a great day.